It's 9:13 on a Tuesday morning. How about we do a show? I'm Joe Donahue. Let me introduce the panel to you, and we'll get started on our Tuesday edition. We have much to talk about, a lot going on, and we want to let you in on the fun. All you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, 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 and we'll include you if we can. We do get a lot of letters, so we can't read everybody's letter, but we like to see what we have and cull through them, right? Is that the right term? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, thank you. Let me introduce the people who are in the room. Political consultant Libby Post is with us. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
The Empire Report's J.P. Miller. Good morning. Happy New Year. How are you, sir?
Happy New Year. I'm great, thanks.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Nice to have you on the program again. Our good friend Mike Spain is with us, and Mike is the newly retired associate editor of the Times Union. Less than a week ago, right?
Right. Yes, it's been a week. I got my Medicare card. I'm officially retired after 40 years at the Hearst newspapers in Albany. 10 years at the Knickerbocker News, where Rosemary Armail once was a investigative reporter.
Oh my God! I'm feeling so old now.
And 30 years at the Times Union.
I miss the Nick News. Awesome. I have to tell you.
Yeah, it was a great newspaper. Right.
Yeah. It was
scrappy. How I cut my teeth. Things were a lot different back then. You know, Erastus Corning was mayor.
Yeah.
Hugh Carey was governor. And
what are you doing now? How are you filling your days?
Well, it's only been a week, Rosemary, and I was on the road a little bit, so we'll.
Maybe you should come over to the Middle East and teach young journalists.
Well, I've got a lot of traveling. I haven't got something that far yet.
I just want to note that in the 20 years that I have known and worked with Mike, it's the first day I've seen him without a tie.
That's pretty good.
So... That's how I do.
Yeah,
that's
look at
you always remind me.
I don't have to worry about tying ties anymore.
Very nice.
At least not for
good.
Now.
Well, congratulations on a wonderful career,
and we're
right. Thrilled that you will continue with us in your capacity as a unpaid panelist.
To continue that
part of my volunteer work. No, I do intend to do some volunteer work, and this is a privilege to do, so thank you.
And the more you hear, the more we like it.
Oh, right. That's nice.
And Alan Chartok, good morning, Alan. How are you?
Hey, man.
All right. So let's get started. We'll go on with what's going on tonight.
I don't think you introduced the woman to your...
Oh, my God. That's right, because she just walked in.
I'll just burst in and tell people who I am.
Rosemary Armeo is here. She is an investigative reporter. She is all about town. She's with us for a couple weeks while she's visiting and then back to Jordan.
Exactly. And I'm wondering how many people you're going to squeeze in here tomorrow.
I think we have the same number as today.
Wow. This is packed.
It is packed. And yesterday we were packed.
It's a round table, but it's a little round table.
It's an oblong table, really.
But today I stole you a chair that you can actually bring you up to the table.
Reach, I know.
And this goes higher if you wanted to.
Oh, I could be above it all.
Yeah.
Good. Up at JP level.
All right. Let's start talking about what's happening in the world. And the big news, of course, is the Trump address. That is, the president yesterday announced that he tweeted that he wanted to take his case to the public on the border wall as well as the government shutdown and wanted to talk to Americans to try to persuade them about this, quote, humanitarian and security crisis on the southern border. The immediate question then became, would the networks cover it? Of course, the cable networks all said they would, but would the main broadcast networks cover it? And then slowly but surely, all of them said, indeed, yes, they would be covering the address. Then the question became, should there be a Democratic response? And the Democrats, both Pelosi and Schumer, went to the networks and said, we should also have our shot at this and not let the president go unchecked. So we would like to have a response. And so now that has been decided. Our airtime, before me going on, I think there was only one network, and now I'm not even sure what it was, had announced had not announced that they were running it, and that didn't mean the other network wasn't going to. It's just that they hadn't officially put out a statement yet. And now the question is, who's going to give it? Who's going to give the rebuttal, the Democratic rebuttal? And that seems to be the question of the hour. However, we still do have the address. And then the president also promised a trip to the border later in the week. Vice President Mike Pence briefed reporters on the status of negotiations and an arranged session, part of an orchestrated effort to sway balking Democrats who say the government should reopen while they wrangle over Mr. Trump's demand for $5.7 billion to begin his border wall. Who would like to begin? Rosemary, go ahead.
Well, I'm too busy rolling my eyes over this whole thing. It's more incredible drama and reality show. And I mean, I hope he does it. I hope he declares an emergency because it'll go into the court, and I don't think he can win. And as for who answers back, I hope it's Nancy Pelosi, not Chuck Schumer, who's so mealy-mouthed. Although AOC dancing through a response is also okay with me.
What about both of them?
Together?
Yeah.
No, she's better alone.
Yeah, I think it's more appropriate for the leader, the highest
exactly.
ranking Democrat,
right.
and, you know,
now there is
as
some,
the leader.
And that
of
is
house.
She,
yeah.
not he?
Yes.
Because
yeah.
he's in
yeah.
the minority.
Right, in the minority.
Right, no, no.
If he were the majority leader in the Senate,
perhaps,
are those
then.
Positions
That's,
equal?
No. The majority leader, the Senate is the higher house. So the majority leader in the Senate is seen as, from protocol, as
they
being,
call it the upper house.
Except
upper
she's house, in line to be the president. So
yes,
how
she
come
is.
That? So that's really, it's very
yeah,
interesting. Yeah.
You could toss
cool.
that. But he is the minority leader.
Right.
She's clearly the
that's
majority
right.
leader,
yeah.
and I think it would
right.
be most
She's just better than he is,
now,
I think,
the,
in countering
and
Trump.
And I think it plays into, look, we have a woman who's a leader.
Well, now in the conversations that I heard on cable news this morning, it seemed as though they were going to go for someone on the outside who had security experience and somebody perhaps
Malcolm Nance
former Homeland Security
very
experience
good,
to say there isn't a crisis basically and that was the way that they were looking to go as of
Jay Johnson
as of yes
right they right. want they want somebody who can refute the notion that we are in a crisis where we were not in one prior
right.
to this week
right
and it's a political crisis that's absolutely true but right. the situation on the border really hasn't changed as Alan pointed out earlier on his commentary experts will present evidence that the biggest cause of illegal immigration is people coming here and overstaying their visas
right.
or coming in, flying in from all over the world, not coming across the one border between the U.S. and Mexico.
And that, Rosemary, was why it's so important that we have the TSA people on duty and guarding, watching. This is...
You're just trying to coming. Wind me up. You're just trying to. Yeah, they're such a vanguard against
yeah.
Security violations. Yeah, trust your life to the TSA, right?
Well, the TSA guys are working without pay.
No, they're so, calling in sick
calling
in record
sick.
Numbers.
Well, yes, they are.
And I don't blame them
Not
for
all
that.
Of them
and I personally think
yeah.
that
some,
that
but
would.
But some
be,
of them are those who are showing up to work are doing it without a paycheck, and it's beginning to cause
oh,
stress.
They,
these are not mm-hmm. highly paid people, and they're living paycheck to paycheck. And without a paycheck, it does put a big wrinkle in their life.
But, you
oh,
know,
great.
If you
they'll be more
to,
crabby.
If you talk to the president and some Republican congresspeople, they'll say that they are not living paycheck to paycheck, and if they had planned better, they wouldn't be in this situation. So, you know, it's really their fault.
Well,
really,
they also
really
assert, the president has asserted that he has heard from a lot of
past
employees
presidents.
Who are no that's true that's another thread but employees who tell him they're okay going without yeah. pay and they don't mind being on a furlough because they are worried about the crisis yeah. of immigrants coming in from
sure that's the great
Mexico.
Thing about Trump he really gets out there and he talks to the people
and he just lies through his teeth
7,000 lies according to the paper this
right.
morning.
Right.
So let me just read this line from the Times Union from the New York Times. Mr. Trump's request that the major networks broadcast his speech live set off a day of tense deliberations at ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox. By Monday evening, they had all agreed to broadcast the president's address live at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Cable news channel, we'll be carrying it live here, by the way. cable news channels, including CNN and Fox News, will also carry the speech. Some journalists worry that handing Mr. Trump a chunk of network primetime could allow the president to assert falsehoods to tens of millions of viewers. But several network producers said privately on Monday that they were uncomfortable turning down the president amid a national event affecting millions, like the government shutdown. Declining Mr. Trump's request could also open the networks to accusations of partisan bias.
Well, the Israelis just had a very similar situation where Netanyahu demanded and got broad coverage of a dramatic speech he promised. And what it was a very...
refuting the charges against him, the corruption charges.
Which are completely all true and he should be out too. And
we'll
so they cut off.
We'll talk about that later, but go ahead.
And they cut off. They cut him off in the middle of the speech. Mm-hmm. Many of the networks there just said, okay, this isn't what you promised, and they cut him off.
I don't think that'll happen.
That would be pretty amazing if our if the networks in the United States cut off Trump on his speech. But who knows whether it will be a traditional face-to-camera speech that other presidents have been known for, or whether it'll be something different. You know, he is a showman. Will he bring in families of people that have been murdered by illegal immigrants? Will he bring in families of people who have overdosed from drugs and kind of make them a prop for his stage show? So I think it'll be interesting to see whether it's a traditional speech to camera or whether it's a little bit more of a reality show.
Well, he's supposed to get, 7 or 8 minutes, 6 or 7 minutes or 8 minutes or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see if he just keeps mouthing on. You know, I think you make a point, Mike. Excuse me, whatever your name is, JP. I think you make a good point, and that is that other presidents have been. When a president says, "I want to go on the air," you give them the time.
Of course.
I mean, that just is part of it. One of the things that we've been hearing from listeners all morning and writing to us and saying, "Why do the networks have to do it?" Well, one of the things that occurs to me, Mike, Rosemary, is that newspapers have it a little better in this country in one way than broadcasters do. And that is broadcasters are controlled by the government.
Right.
I mean, you get a license or you don't, or they take it away, or you're asked for something else. And so that's a big difference.
Yeah, they just put a heavy tariff on newsprint for newspapers.
Mm-hmm. But we deal with this in the Middle East all the time. You know, if we run this, we're going to get into trouble with the government. And my response is to them and to the networks here, what is the point of having a network if you're not allowed to broadcast what should be broadcast?
Well, the point
and to make
the,
these decisions.
Well, Rosemary, as you well know, the president of that company is either in or out depending on profits and whether or not, because to them, you say, what is the point? Well, to them, the point is survival, personal survival.
Yeah, and the networks may say, oh, well, we're reluctantly airing this Trump speech. They love it. They're going to make tons of money. It's going to be the best ratings. This is, I think, Trump's first addressed primetime address to the nation. They're going to make tons of money. It's great for them.
In my house, there's a big debate. Oh, let's not watch it. He says the same stuff. He'll lie, blah, blah, blah. But I can't turn it off. I'm definitely going to be watching
it. Well, I'll be watching, too, but I have to the articles that I've read on this issue is the networks say that they'll take a hit because their programming, their primetime entertainment programming is going to bring in many more viewers than the president would, and they have an exclusivity on their program versus something that's going to be run everywhere.
So what happens?
They're
going to
lose money, you think?
Oh, yeah, because people now have an option. They can switch over to Netflix or
ESPN or whatever they want to.
Right. Yeah.
What happens to the other 23 minutes? So, in other words, let's say it's 7 minutes and they're in prime
half-hour
time.
Show, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, they can go and they can go back whenever they want, but I would assume you've got that and then you have the response and then
that's a good point.
I mean, you've got 10 minutes of, say, 10
analysis.
Minutes of Trump, 10 minutes of the rebuttal, and then 10 minutes of analysis and you're out.
And people are, so what is on CBS and NBC on a Tuesday night?
Well, NCIS is on.
None of us can name what's on.
I can.
It can't be that popular.
ABC is the con.
Right.
I do know that.
NCIS is at 8. FBI, which is a new thing, is at 9, which is doing well. It's 9 o'clock on Tuesday.
Oh, that's right, 9 o'clock.
And then NCIS New Orleans is at 10 o'clock on CBS. On Channel 10 or ABC, there's a bunch of comedies. There's Blackish. There's Splitting Up Together. The Kids Are All Right.
Popular.
And the Rookie starts at 10. And on Channel 13, you've got Ellen's NBC. Game of Games, which is like, okay, fine.
And then, I'd rather watch Trump.
Yeah. Right. And so, you know, but what people will do is
I think JP makes a point that perhaps the networks aren't in their golden period right now. But
they'll go to WWE SmackDown on USA. That's what people will do. Or The Breakfast Club, which is on AMC.
They have SmackDown at the White House. This is much better.
Netflix.
That's Mike's point, Netflix. Right.
This is the first Oval Office speech that this president has given, and people will be, and especially knowing it's only going to be 6 or 7 minutes, I'd like to see it. If it was going to be an hour, I think I would rather, pour hot tar down my nose or something like that.
Hot tar down your nose. That's a good one, Mike.
There's a retirement plan.
Wait. What's the movie, though? As long as you were giving us the lineup, what's the movie on the old movie channel?
Planning our night's entertainment.
On the movie channel?
On the old movie channel.
Okay, one moment, please.
Channel 58 up here.
AMC.
No,
Mr.
Not
Smith
AMC.
Goes to Washington,
AMC
I hope.
AMC is the phony one. This is the AMC has commercials. This
TMZ?
Turner Movie Classics.
Turner Movie Classics. Okay, you keep discussing.
Oh, okay.
Well,
why
the research is being done.
Right, yeah.
I think he's going to get good ratings. I think people will tune in.
How can
in.
He
there's
not
a,
get
there's
good
a
ratings?
Fellow,
yeah, if you're on every channel.
There is a sense of drama to this, and his case, and they're building this case that we're in this crisis and that terrorists, people on terrorist watch lists, are just swarming across the border, even though NBC did a report that used government figures to show that 5 or 6 in the last year have been picked up who are on the terrorist watch lists at the Mexican border.
I think it's
border.
Up to 8. They found
up to 8?
Eight
yeah, but they said they had it over, I think it was 4 figures. I think it was over 1,000 or something that the administration was saying when their own data says it's been 8. And those are only people on the list. That doesn't mean they're terrorists. I mean, we know there's politicians end up on terrorist watch lists.
Well, he's just a great showman. Do you remember how many people watched his announcement on the Supreme Court? And that was just an announcement of a name that was already out. So he knows how to build a suspense.
Right. It is. We're in the midst, as JP said, of reality TV.
Yes. It'll be good for the television manufacturers. I'll tell you that much right now. Because when I was a kid in 50 West 96th Street, then what happened was the first television came to Richard Ostroh's house, and Mrs. Ostroh said we were welcome, but she handed each of us a list of rules of how do we watch the television.
Oh, wow.
And one of the rules was no throwing shoes at the television.
No throwing shoes at the television.
People might do that.
Don't
tonight.
You see that?
Sorry, right, 10 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, it's called The Black Book, and exiled from 1949, exiled to Austria, former French military commander Lafayette orders
somebody
to destroy impending dictatorship of Rome.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Mike Spain, JP Miller, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok has letters, so we'll go there.
Panel, please talk about McConnell, a top Trump enabler. I think we've talked about
we've
him.
We've talked about him a lot, yeah, but we can.
Well, McConnell is just sitting tight because he says he won't bring any of these continuing funding resolutions that have passed in the House of Representatives to the Senate because the president has promised to veto them. But you wonder, already a bunch of Republicans in the House have agreed with the Democrats for a continuing resolution, including Elise Stefanik of the North Country of, upstate New York, have crossed over. If a vote would come up in the Senate, it would be interesting to see how many Republicans would vote for a continuing
resolution. Right, so he's not going to let that happen.
Yeah, and he's afraid to let that happen, right?
You know, that's typical for him. We heard from Tom, who is a poet, The Wall. He says, Trumpty Dumpty wanted a wall. Nancy and Chuck didn't want it at all. Mitch and the Senate kept out of the fray because they always knew Mexico wouldn't pay. That's what I'm
talking about. Very clever.
Yeah, there you go.
Bravo.
And Keith says, Democratic rebuttal. Good morning, panel. I'd like to nominate Robert Mueller to give the rebuttal to Trump's televised Oval Office propaganda session. This wall fight is just another distraction from Trump's special counsel and Southern District of New York criminal probes. The president of the United States is under criminal investigation, has been named in open court as an unindicted co-conspirator in a felony, and that's from Keith. Melinda says, we C-A-N, capital. We can turn it off tonight. We don't have to listen to more lies, lies, lies. Jeremy says, Democratic response. Panel, is the request for a Democratic response typical? Does the other side usually get to respond to broadcast presidential speeches? I think the answer to that is yes.
State of the Union, certainly.
State of the Union and other races. Yeah. And other,
it's not unusual.
No.
Right. Okay. Okay. I didn't.
I mean, we didn't have it after 9/11. The president then gave speeches. You didn't have Democrats coming out and saying there's not really a problem. So.
So Mike in Rexford, where everybody's a king and publishes the Times Union, Mike in Rexford said the Dems should choose Elizabeth Warren to give the response. She's an excellent speaker and convincingly debunked.
They can't.
She's a candidate.
She's a candidate.
His lies.
Right. She was very good on the campaign trail, though, in Iowa. She was surprisingly
strong. I can't believe the crowds.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, the people that are, a lot of people coming out.
A left-wing populist message. People like it.
So the question is, what's the number of left-wing populists? So even if you get, 2% and they all come out, looks like a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Know what I mean?
Well, they said that about Trump.
Crowd size is a good indicator for politicians running for office. So I think it's a very good sign
for
Elizabeth
Warren.
Size
matters?
Crowd size matters in a big way, especially when you're running in a primary for president of the United States.
I see.
It does.
Trump's airtime, says Gene. Everyone should contact the networks to demand they not broadcast Trump, or at least allow a post-speech rebuttal by the opposition. I just did. This is fascism. Full stop from Gene. And John says, point of information, presidents do not always get time on the networks when they request it. President Obama was refused time on this very issue when he wanted to explain why he was using executive authority to address immigration issues. I wish the networks and the WAMC would do the same here.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Please. I read about that. He did not formally request. He had an address, and he did not make a formal request to the networks, President Obama. They did not run it because a formal request was not made. So I don't think that is, from my understanding and reading up on that, because I heard that argument, that's not valid because he did not make the formal request.
And did the White House make a formal request on this one?
Yes.
You think, yeah?
I know. To all, okay.
And put another way, if I ask you to marry me, would you say yes? You don't get it, do you?
No,
it's a tentative question.
The point is, if Obama, there may have been negotiations, subliminal negotiations about if I ask you, will you say?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay. And John says we did that. Remember when he wanted to explain why he's using executive authority to address immigration issues? I wish the networks and WAMC would do the same here. It's a made-up issue. Far from demonstrating bias, refusal to carry this dog and pony show would demonstrate that fact. And that's John from Sarasota, Florida.
Well, the networks and the news media in general have an obligation to do an immediate, real-time fact check of what the president asserts tonight. If he asserts falsehoods or if his assertions are factual, they need to verify them or refute them with facts and attribution. I think that's an obligation that is out there. It's a challenge that's up there, and I think that's what we're going to see very quickly.
Especially for a guy who has just been accused of telling, as of this morning, 7,000 lies.
So it'll be interesting if they actually do a runner across the bottom.
Well,
in other words, this
I think
is a lie.
Would be, right. That would be difficult.
No, MSNBC could do that.
Oh, MSNBC.
Yeah, I mean, one of the, I guess, in the early negotiations, one of the networks had asked that they see a prepared text prior.
Right. What's the answer there?
No.
That would make a difference anyway.
Well, they wanted time to be able to prepare.
They wanted to
graphics.
Get their fact checkers there.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. And we've gotten people here at WAMC, Congressional Corner, and other places where they want to see what we're going to ask them. We don't tell them.
That's not an interview. That's
what'd you say, dear?
That is not an interview. If you have to submit written questions, no. That's asking for a statement.
And Alan, who writes frequently, says Trump ads. Glad to hear Rosemary. Isn't that nice, Rosemary?
Very nice. Yeah. Thank you.
I just wanted to share, not sure if this was mentioned, that I've been seeing banner ads on YouTube with Trump's face asking people, kids basically, to text, quote, border to some number if you are, quote, for border security, unquote, paid for by his reelection campaign. Well, this is very interesting, this whole idea, and I've often wondered about this, why people wait until the election period to buy ads. They buy ads. The Trump people have been running a permanent campaign from day one.
Yep. He also has, I think, a YouTube ad that says, my staffers are about to give me a list of my campaign contributors, and I'd like you to put your name on that list before I get that, that list.
He's heavy into fundraising all the time and soliciting people who have signed up for his emails and everything. It's an ongoing campaign. It never stopped.
That's all I have, Joe.
Okay. Let's move on then, if we can. And that is, let's just talk about the border itself and what's going on there. We've been talking about the speech, but the president will be visiting the nation's southern border. So how does this all, we can assume that if we're doing this tonight, the president is visiting on Thursday, that the shutdown's just going to continue, right? And we're not going to see any rapid response if the show, if you will, continues to go on this week.
Well, there's an evolution going on. There was one story last night during the meetings Pence had where reporters asked him if it's true that the president has lowered his demand to $2.5 billion, which is lower than half of what he was insisting he had to have for the border barrier. He's changing the name of it. He proposed changing it to a steel wall because the Democrats don't like concrete. I don't understand that one. Didn't get much of a reaction.
Yeah.
But when Pence was asked, he smiled. He didn't deny it, but he just kind of smiled at that number. It looks like President Trump is trying to broker a deal where he'll take less. He'll call it border security. The euphemism is evolving. It isn't the border wall. It's border security now, and he's beginning to use that term too. And then he'll tell everybody, "I won.
Right.
I got what I needed, and we'll get more when we need it." And they caved in, and that's the way he'll portray it. And the people that support Trump will take it that way, and others will look at it differently.
What are Rush and Laura saying these days? How do they see all this? Because they're the real players, as we know.
Oh, right. And they are hardliners. Rush Limbaugh and Laura Ingraham and Hannity are hardliners. They're insisting that Trump stick it for as long as he needs to. There is some, he's only a few days away from setting a record for the longest shutdown, and that probably is appealing
records
to him.
One more headline for him, one more thing to put on his.
Timothy writes a correction, broadcasting licensing. And he starts his letter by saying, morning, M-O-U-R-N-I, morning, pal. We'll never know, will we?
No Freudian slip there.
We'll never know. The networks are not subject to FCC licensing regulations. The actual broadcast affiliates are. So far, so good, before he makes this mistake. However, the networks may choose to cover Trump or not without FCC repercussions. Of course, a decision to not feed Trump will feed his narrative of media bias. But, Timothy, thank you for your correction, except that some of these networks are owned by our own station.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So therefore, and also they would face tremendous repercussions if they in any way endangered their people, in my opinion.
Well, and also let us not forget that PBS is included in this too as one of the entities taking the address.
Yeah, I mean, let's say that one of the networks, you know, ABC, decided they weren't going to broadcast the president's speech. The feed is available. I guess local affiliates could decide to run it themselves without the network wraparound.
We do. And we beg people sometimes. Yeah. Right, Joe? We beg people to let us use the let us use our feet.
So, I mean, it's not entirely controlled by the networks. The local stations can certainly find other ways to get the president's message up.
To answer Alan's question, I mean, if in this case the White House has a feed, we can pick that feed up. If NPR decides they aren't going to run something and we want something, we can get it from them.
And we've begged Channel 13 in the past, if I remember, here.
If they're going to run it, yes.
If they're doing something, if we could use it. And they're always very nice about it. They say yes. Okay, and then Ricky says, hi, panel. Trump giving government agents monetary advice? How many times has he been bankrupt again? Also, this defiant bluster from Erdogan about the Kurdish fighters seems rather timely since we are no longer talking about Khashoggi. I wonder what that conversation with Trump was about. And that's from Rick.
Yep.
And Jay says, tonight's speech. Thankfully, I get done with my day's work at 8 p.m. tonight, just in time to listen to our president's lie, like the VP did yesterday about the thousands of terrorists they have stopped at the border. Love you, Rosemary. And that's from Jay the bus driver.
Thanks, Jay the bus driver.
That's right. Well, and then we go here to Brian. He says, wouldn't it be great to hear our president and other elected officials recognize that climate change is the real emergency facing our country and the world? And the Oval Office speech was designed to get Americans behind the need to stop burning fossil fuels. Brian in Altamont. Brian, don't be holding your breath.
Okay. I don't think you're going to hear it during tonight's address.
There's too much money to be made in undermining all the EPA regulations. So.
And Alexander says, give them enough space. With any luck, our child president will be overwhelmed by the primitive slot and incriminate himself even more. Give him enough space to do it. Kind regards. And that's from Alexander. However, Alexander, that's an insult to children.
Well, he could have come across like Humphrey Bogart in the Caine Mutiny and begin to kind of implode on the air.
Right.
Yeah. I think he has in the past, sort of getting close to that.
That was on over the weekend.
Well, they should show it again tonight on TMC instead of that other thing they're showing. Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 11 minutes before 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, JP Miller, Libby Post, and Rosemary Armeo. Good to have you here, Rosemary. How are we doing on that?
We're doing good.
All right.
This is amazing.
Just play a little game.
I'm addicted to computer games.
All right.
It keeps me calm.
Well, that's good. We want you calm.
Puppy and kitten videos.
Do you want to go to? I was going to go to Netanyahu, but can I get off the shutdown thing for a second, which is about the IRS.
Okay.
So originally they had said the narrative had been that because of the shutdown, the IRS would not be able to process returns. White House now rules that the IRS can issue tax refunds during the shutdown, aiming to bring back agency employees. Last year and during previous administrations, the IRS said it would not pay tax refunds during a government shutdown, but Trump administration lawyers ruled Monday that the refunds could be processed after all, a move that some Democrats called...
I'm sorry, the notion Trump administration lawyers ruled.
Right.
That phrase has just got me a little bit
Well,
giddy.
Get ready. There's more. A move that some Democrats called, quote, legally dubious. The decision could prove extremely consequential for U.S. households and the U.S. economy. Last year, between January 29th and March 2nd, the IRS paid more than $147 billion. How many walls could you build with that? In tax refunds to 48.5 million households. But it is also the latest in a string of sudden shifts and legal reversals that have seen the White House reverse precedent in the face of public pressure. Senior administration officials changed rules to pay Coast Guard salaries in December, restart an IRS program to clear mortgage applications, and reopen some national parks. They're now searching for ways to prevent the nation's food assistance program from running out of money. Unless the shutdown ends, the program lacks funds to cover expected demand in February. By March, it could be out of money entirely. A new legal ruling on the issue could come this week.
Wow.
Well, you can see that it's hitting his constituents when it delays the refunds that people people build their whole life around paying off their credit card bills with the tax refunds that they get. You know, they build up the credit card debt during the holiday season, and they get the tax return to pay it off. And people live paycheck to paycheck. And somebody like Donald Trump doesn't even understand that concept.
But and yet he gets on TV, and says, I can relate. Do you love that?
Yeah. I don't know how.
I can relate to these people not getting their paycheck.
But it's not just, I mean, the tax returns are important for everybody.
Sure.
But food stamps and all of those social programs that his base relies on.
But don't you think, Libby, that if food stamps and other social service programs that his base relies on are at stake, that might actually shake some of the Democrats to look for some compromise?
No. Why? Why would they?
Because it's going to hurt people.
Yes, it is going to hurt people, but it's hurting his people. And but one would hope that the Republicans would say, oh, my God, we're hurting our own base here. We need to do something.
Traditionally, though, Republicans can hold out longer
right.
on that
they don't
than
care.
Democrats.
I know, and Democrats don't want people to suffer.
This tactic
it's absolutely
began
true.
Back, you know, in the Newt Gingrich days.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right. On America.
And it has been more effective, I think, for Republicans, although it can backfire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Things are starting to backfire.
If the Democrats give in this time, though, it's a loss way beyond just this shutdown. He will use the tactic again.
How can they give in? I mean, basically, for the Democrats to give in, I mean, they've drawn a line. They would have to change their view that a $5 billion expenditure towards a border wall was a good idea.
But,
it either is or it isn't. It's not an incremental thing.
Here's the scenario. We'll give you the money. You give us a deal on the Dreamers.
And that's, of course, what some are worried about, that he'll give away. So, I mean, if you were a Democratic member of Congress and you had a chance to get the Dreamers all secure permanently and some meaningful, reasonable, just changes in the immigration policy, would you do it for a $5 billion border wall?
You know what? I would surely consider it because I would think they haven't even spent the money they got so far on the wall. It's all a joke. So I'm going to risk the $5 billion.
Right. And then in 2 years, when there's somebody else in the Oval Office, they'll use the money for security and they'll establish a trust fund that'll achieve the same kind of thing without building a stupid wall.
Except for the fact that he'll make the deal on DACA and then he'll retract it. And I think. Democrats
oh, why? Has he done that,
that
before?
Yeah, and I think the Democrats know that. So making a deal with this man means absolutely nothing because he doesn't stand to his word.
Well, it's also we're talking about immigration policies and negotiations. The wall is really not a policy. It's really a symbol.
Correct.
And it is a symbol that Trump sees as beneficial to him politically, and it's a symbol that the Democrats see as beneficial to them to oppose. So there is this standstill where both parties feel like they're benefiting from this standoff.
Mm. Yeah. You know, Tom wrote us a letter. I just wanted to read it to you. He said, according to Andy Borowitz, tonight's speech will be simulcast in English.
Borowitz.
I love Borowitz.
He's hysterical.
He's got rich material these days.
Yeah,
the Borowitz
yeah.
report.
All right. Anybody else on that?
No.
Okay.
Netanyahu.
All right. This just in. let's talk about Netanyahu. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu kept Israelis hanging for 3 hours Monday night after his party said he had a dramatic announcement to make. But his address fell decidedly flat, with the Israeli leader using it to contest corruption allegations that may be coming to a head in the lead up to elections. Time to coincide with primetime evening news, Netanyahu's big revelation was that he had demanded that police allow him to confront former colleagues who have agreed to give evidence in corruption cases against him. Tonight, I revealed to you that during the investigations against me, I demanded a confrontation with the state witnesses. He wanted to look them in the eye, Netanyahu said. Police, however, had refused his request twice, he said, in what he appears to consider an injustice. He repeated his demand to confront them and said he should be allowed to do it publicly, live. Let the talk about reality shows.
Mm-hmm.
Let the police see, let the public rather see everything, hear everything, said Netanyahu. So underwhelmed was Israel's Channel 10 that it cut off its live television broadcast in the middle of the seven-minute speech. Its chief political correspondent, Barak Ravid, called the spectacle chutzpah. It was a slap in the face for the media-conscious leader as he enters campaign mode after calling early elections. He's widely believed to have done so to get a new mandate before he is indicted. Police have recommended charges in three corruption cases, two of which involve allegations of bribery in return for favorable news coverage.
And his wife is also under indictment.
I think she was the one they looked at first.
She's the one who really calls all the shots, from what I understand.
Is he following what Trump does, or is Trump emboldened by
together.
Him?
I think
there's Netanyahu, Trump, Drogen, right, from Turkey.
Erdogan
from Turkey. And then you've got Putin, you know, who doesn't necessarily have a relationship with Netanyahu. But all of these strongmen, they all act the same way. I think Netanyahu has to go. I think he's dangerous for Israel's continued existence. His policies, you know, I've shied away from talking about this forever. But his policies and letting the ultra-Orthodox community, the rabbis there, really control civil life, has undermined Israeli democracy. When Israel was formed, it was formed out of this need to have a place for the Jews to go. And so the heralding of democracy, the importance of democracy was not always as important or as much of a priority as having a place for the Jews to be able to, having a Jewish state. But we've gotten to a point now where, you know, he's being a strong man, just like Trump is trying to be, and some of these other guys, and it's ruining the country. And it's, you know, he's got to go.
I read a piece yesterday that was an analysis of how Jews, according to surveys
in Israel, are
backing Trump 100%. I mean, there's very strong support for Trump, but Jews in the United States are very unhappy with Trump. And this must be causing some division between the Jews in the U.S. and Israel.
And it doesn't stop there.
No, it doesn't. I mean, there are divisions here that are ripping the Jewish community apart over Israel, over the Palestinian question, I will always believe in a two-state solution. I believe that Hamas and Hezbollah have to, you know, recognize Israel's right to exist before anything more can happen in terms of that. But it is ripping apart the Jewish community, and I see it all the time. And people, you know, going to the same synagogue at the opposite aisles and not necessarily talking to each other. Netanyahu has done a great disservice to what it means to, from my perspective, to have a Jewish state that is a democratic Jewish state.
Yeah, that's one philosophical level. The other is, of course, what are these guys, including the people here in the state legislature, the Congress, Netanyahu, what do they have to steal? Don't you think they ever scratch their heads and say, what are you, why would I endanger everything I've got?
Yeah, if it were purely an ideological or a political discussion, it would be one thing. But Netanyahu is a crook.
And his wife is a crook.
And his family, and there's strong allegations in there. And he's, you know, he wants to subvert the whole justice system to confront the state accusers on TV. Come on. He's not above the law.
Can you imagine our doing that here?
But they think that they're
Trump
above
would love
the law.
That. Trump has been doing it on Twitter.
The problem is that they do think that they're above
Correct.
The law.
That's right.
And it takes a lot to bring them down. Now we have, I mean, in New York, Dean Skelos is going to jail today. And it took years.
Is Netanyahu expected to win re-election?
Yes. His numbers are low, but there's
so who are the alternatives? Is always
there are no alternatives that are nearly as popular, and he has done, in the eyes of many Israelis, a lot for the country. They don't,
it comes down to
everything Libby says is true. The settlements have made it a bigger, stronger country. There is no two states anymore. There's no room for two states if you look at all the settlements.
And will it be an overwhelming, like, will he win? You know, I don't understand as well as you guys do, but the politics. Will he win 70% of the vote over there?
And by the way, he's not the first prime minister who will go to jail.
No. That's become kind of a tradition there. They're like, is Illinois governors the Israeli
It's hard.
It's tradition, for goodness sake.
Being a Nassau County executive.
Okay, we have to take a break. We'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. So nice to have you with us. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Do you have letters, Alan? I didn't see them.
Oh, yeah, there are.
If they came in, I didn't.
They did. They came in.
I didn't keep track. All right.
Libby, thank you. Very well said. More people have to start speaking up about Netanyahu in the media and amongst each other, and that's Joan from Glenmont.
I like how she spelled Netanyahu. It was Y-A-H-O-O at the end.
I see. Yeah. And Barbara says, tax refunds. All well and good to receive our tax returns, but let's not forget that the only way to do this is to call in agents who are on furlough and have them do the work without pay. I bet that's not exactly right. I'll bet if they want to find a way to pay the agents, they will just say, snap, we're going to pay the agents.
But they can stay. I mean, there's two different classifications. There's people out on furlough who actually could apply for unemployment. But there's people who are required to come to work, like TSA agents, FBI agents, and others, who are not getting paid. And that's where you're getting a high level, I guess, on TSA agents across the country, a high level of call-ins who are sick. But they can't get, because they're only temporarily not being paid, they can't get unemployment insurance like the furloughed people can.
And they can't strike.
Oh, of course not. But the furloughed people, if they get unemployment insurance and then they get hired back and they get back pay, then they have to give back the unemployment pay. It's kind of complicated.
And we have heard from Arizona, from Quartzsite, Arizona. Quartzsite? Anybody heard that? Boom, rah, Mike. Just a note of thanks to Mike Spain for continuing his participation on the panel. He always contributes his knowledge to our knowledgeable panel. There you go. And Margaret says, national emergency. Is it possible this national emergency could drag on through 2020, resulting in no presidential election, as he stays president as long as this, quote, emergency lasts, which could be a long, long time?
No.
Even, in quote, even years, he has said, thank you for all you do, panel, be well. And that's from Margaret, who says, please use my first name only.
All right.
Marvin, your secret is safe with us.
That's right.
I want to know our real name.
It's.
All right, let's move on to other things. I thought this story was interesting.
That's good.
Thank you very much.
I like that.
Are we done on Netanyahu? Anybody want anything else on that?
No.
Okay. What did you say?
Done.
Okay, done.
Is it true that the Senate is voting today on a measure that would disallow, which sounds unconstitutional, a measure to divest, that the word, in investments in Israel, the way that was done in apartheid?
Yeah.
And that's going to actually happen?
I.
What's your view on that, Libby?
Well, honestly, I'm not in support of the BDS movement, okay? I don't know how this bill that will make it impossible to talk about it ever is going to be deemed constitutional. I don't know.
Yeah. And I wanted to post a story about this, but there hasn't been a lot of coverage in what I would call mainstream.
Exactly. My Palestinian friends from Jordan are sending me notes today. Get hold of your senator. Do something. I go, you don't realize my senator would not. person.
And what, by the way, is BDS? What does it stand for, BDS?
It's boycott, divest, and sanction.
Okay.
And why is it not being covered in the mainstream press?
That's a good question. I think, here's my
chicken
theory,
egg.
but you may know this, is that it has come up twice before, and because it's so, as Libby says, apparently blatantly unconstitutional, it's gone nowhere. So it's not been taken seriously.
And it's considered anti-Semitic. And and anti-Israel. I mean, there's a, you know, some people will say there's no difference between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, and you know, it's a distinction without a difference. And it's seen, it's being used as a cudgel against the Jewish community here, and in, and of course against Israel. But it's not being covered that well in the mainstream press. You need to go to either the progressive press, the Jewish press, to find stories on.
Right, but I mean, if the movement is getting no real traction in the legislature, or it's not getting any attention by lawmakers, it's not so much news either. That's right. Probably why you're not seeing it.
Yeah, that's probably it, although there are a lot of people who are talking about it. Mm-hmm. And now you have some new members of Congress who are going to champion it.
Yeah. It's being compared to the movement against South Africa with apartheid to change
and
policy
it's not,
by
and,
money.
And it's not the same.
No,
but,
it's not.
But it is. You're right. I've heard it portrayed that way. Yeah.
Right. And certainly, it's very popular in Jordan. I will say that.
Yeah. You know, the problem is that the amount of anti-Semitism that has come about in the last 2 years, it's, you know, Trump's verbiage, despite the fact that his daughter is married to an Orthodox Jew and she's supposedly converted, you know, he's giving license to this hatred. And, you know, Jews will not replace us was the clarion call in Charlottesville.
And here's a letter on some of this from Larry. He says, if you had any great illusory hopes that Israel would be some sort of ultra-democratic super kibbutz, well, too bad, so sad. You'll have to live with your disappointment and disgust that it turns out Israel is not some utopian beacon for mankind. I find it laughable that there is an expectation from those living outside Israel who seem to be harp on the meme that anything short of perfection must be labeled as utter failure in some sort of zero-sum game of nation-building because, quote, Jews should know better, and that's from Larry.
I think that we need to switch from Israel to Alabama, where the Dems look bad.
We have to
show that we are liberals who can talk about bad Democrats.
I want to talk about two of my favorite things, alcohol and Alabama. Democrats faked online push to outlaw alcohol in Alabama race. So here is the charge that during the Roy Moore race, that there was a Democratic online push to link Moore as a candidate who was trying to make the state of Alabama
a dry
state. So the Dry Alabama Facebook page, illustrated with stark images of car wrecks and videos of families ruined by drink, had a blunt message: alcohol is the devil's work and the state should ban it entirely. Along with a companion Twitter feed, the Facebook page appeared to be the work of Baptist teetotalers who supported the Republican Roy Moore in the 2017 Alabama Senate race. Pray for Roy Moore, one tweet exhorted. In fact, the Dry Alabama campaign, not previously reported, was the stealth creation of progressive Democrats who were out to defeat Mr. Moore. The second such, and this is really the key here, mm-hmm. the second such secret effort to be unmasked. In a political bank shot made in the last 2 weeks of the campaign, they thought associating Mr. Moore with calls for a statewide alcohol ban, because possible pedophilia wasn't enough.
Right, right.
Right.
Good God. They thought that calls for a statewide alcohol ban would hurt him with moderate business-oriented Republicans and assist the Democrat Doug Jones, who won the special election by a hair-thin margin.
Yeah. Well, it's stupid. I mean, you know, it's stupid to get as low as the other guys are. This turns around and bites you in the behind. But the larger question, of course, is this where we're going? In order to win elections, do you have to do this stuff? And are people going to justify it?
Well, this is, I think, a modern version of leaving flyers on windshields that has been happening since in the 70s and 80s. And I think that Roy Moore certainly lost the election on his own. And I don't know that I would give credit to these progressive activists for giving him his loss. I think, again, it's a modern version of leaving flyers on windshields. It's going to continue to happen.
You know, but the Republicans have been doing this sort of stuff for eons, you know.
Yes, let's but that back. Cannot justify it. There's a big problem with that.
Yeah, I understand that. But everybody gets their knickers in a twist when the Democrats do it.
Come on, Libby. It's just not right. It ain't right.
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that the Democrats...
Can we just leave it to the Russians, okay?
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, you know, the Russians are doing on behalf of the Republicans.
They do it
here.
Better. The Russians do it better. They didn't get caught.
Yeah, didn't get
I don't know. I always hated the swift boating of John Kerry, who was he's a true American hero, no matter what you think of his politics. And he was destroyed by a fraudulent campaign. I hate this. And I also am horrified, as you say, that this was needed. The man was accused rightly of horrible crimes. He's the worst candidate ever. And he just barely got beat, whether this added to it or not. I'm sort of grateful it did, but terrible that that was required.
Well, the guy who, the progressive activist who did this, his name is Matt Osborne.
Right.
He says, if you don't do it, you're fighting with one hand tied behind your back. You have a moral imperative to do this, to do whatever it takes. Wow. That is frightening talk.
Scary.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is.
You know, we have to remember, I mean, last night we were talking about We had a Capital Women meeting, and we were talking about the state of things. And someone reminded us of Michelle Obama's quote, "When they go low, we go high."
Except that doesn't always work.
No,
does
it doesn't. But that's quote. What we're asking people. That's what we're asking the Democrats to do.
What did you say, Rosemary?
I don't like that quote. I mean, I'm sorry. Politics is not a moral high game. And
well, then it's not a moral high game, then you can't fault people for doing this stuff.
Yes, I can.
No. No.
Why? This is the thing that you have to be consistent. No, I will play the more. You try to do the right thing, but sometimes the right thing is hard to discern. This is wrong. This is just wrong on every level.
And it turns the right around, thing. And as I said before, it bites you in the hiney. Because what happens is, moral high, that's right, and you always get caught. Sooner or later, you're going to get caught if you do something wrong. Our mothers taught us that.
Yes. You never do wrong by doing right. That was my mother's motto.
Okay, that's fine. I'll still go with Michelle's motto.
Well, this becomes situation ethics. The end justifies the means regardless. And that's a slippery slope.
It's a slippery slope.
I also am one that believes that these tactics that are used like this, they get a lot of attention in the media. I don't think they affect elections. I think voters are way smarter than believing crazy Facebook pages. Way smarter.
Really? Then how did Trump get elected?
How did Trump get elected?
Yeah.
I would say James Comey came out and reopened an investigation with Hillary
Clinton.
I couldn't
agree with you more.
His approval and his poll numbers went up 13 points in 7 days,
we could list
and he
about
won the
eight,
election.
Yeah. Eight things.
So
I
don't think it was the Russians.
Solution.
I'm sorry.
For all those people who think James Comey is some kind of hero, let us remember that, please.
No, we don't.
Yeah, but the thing is that the Russian bots and all that sort of stuff definitely played into the ability for Trump to win.
I think
if you say no to that, you're not recognizing the reality of how social media is now impacting our elections.
I think people are way smarter. People know what is real stuff on Facebook and what is fake stuff.
I don't necessarily agree with that. And the fact that the Swift boat campaign worked against John.
People don't know squat.
Okay, go ahead, Mike.
No, I mean
they believe Fox News.
No,
they believe Fox News.
That's right.
And that's just as foolish.
Well, when you're getting nothing else, that is that comes to you as factual, and you don't have anything to refute.
And by the way, it doesn't matter that everybody doesn't believe it or does believe it. 5% is regarded as a blowout in an election. So you get 5% believing it, or 2%, or 1%, as in the case of those three states where 70,000 people made a difference. That's all you need.
I think believing Fox News and believing ads that were put up by a super PAC, that's one thing. It's another thing of someone who intentionally put out false and misleading information, and I think that people see that it's false and misleading.
No, they don't. JP, people don't know how to discern between the fake news stuff that comes across on Facebook and other social media and the right stuff. And they just don't.
So you think swing voters, these people that decide elections, can't figure it out?
No, I don't. I don't think many people can.
On razor-thin elections, it can make a difference.
It really does make a difference. There's absolutely no way about it.
I like Mike. I like Mike. He said it can make a difference.
I think it does make
a difference. Did you read the New York Times story about the sites, the fake news sites, where the guy gets up every morning and just dreams up, he picks from the headlines,
right,
the most outrageous of statements, and it doesn't matter even what it is, and then puts it out and then gets hundreds and sometimes thousands of hits. It goes viral every single day. So I do think that there's a percentage of people who believe it, and we don't really know the effect that they have in voting.
But to JP's point, which I think is a fair one, is but are you believe what you want to believe?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And this stuff reinforces those beliefs, whether they're real or whether they're correct or not.
Now, I should point out that it also hurts Democrats who are playing fair when these kinds of stories surface.
That's right.
And it undermines, the ultimate effect is that it undermines the credibility of those trying to be credible.
But it doesn't undermine the credibility of the Republicans. That's what I find so outrageous in all of this.
It's like Trump. People already accept that Trump, 7,000, did you say, Alan?
Yes,
yeah. People already, okay, but he always exaggerates. He's not a politician. That's what he does, and that's kind of the way he is. I understand that, but when you lie, sir, that
it's
really
different.
Offends me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. All right, let's do some letters.
Okay, here we go. Johnny says, another one. Wasn't the government shut down last year through New Year's as well? What are the differences and similarities between last year's and this year's shutdown?
It didn't last.
Everybody get your blue book out and get ready. Okay, there was that.
It was shorter.
Okay, and then
Congress was involved.
Here's one
it was over immigration and the Congress caved in.
Here's one that's going to be above my pay grade. Phil writes, immigration. Check out today's Gazette opinion article by Froma Harab on immigration controlling illegal unemployment. No, illegal employment. Very few states use the E-Verify program that identifies the status of prospective employees. Those that are using it have a marked decline in undocumented workers. This is a voluntary program and is not used because it would cut off access to what is essentially slave labor, illegal employees that get paid a pittance and have no rights. This benefits employers and most likely all of us by keeping costs low. The dilemma that is immigration, stop the invasion, get votes to stop the incentives to employers and increase our costs. We've avoided the tough choice with lip service, time to call the bluff and make every E-Verify and make E-Verify federally mandatory. Somebody keeping up with that?
Some people regard E-Verify as anti-business. Mm-hmm. Other people say E-Verify is anti-immigrants.
Okay, for the rest of us, what is E-Verify?
Oh, it's where the employee and the employer has to get documentation essentially from their employee to verify that they are here on a green card and that they can legally work. And that's all it is. And there's a federal database that they can quickly check with. And many elect not to do it. It's inconvenient, or it may prevent them from hiring somebody at a very low rate and having pretty firm control over them, like slave labor.
Right.
And one last letter that I have here, it says, Dry Alabama scam. We desperately need campaign finance and truth in advertising laws that severely punish behavior like this. Otherwise, we will completely filter out the honest politicians, parentheses, who can't compete with their opponents' dirty tricks. Thanks. Chris from Albany.
Well, did that guy in Alabama break any laws in the United States by running this campaign?
Mm-mm. Well, no, and he also wasn't, from what we know, he wasn't working with the Democratic campaign.
No, he wasn't working with the Joneses' campaign. But no, there are no laws, and that's part of the problem.
We learned during Watergate that dirty tricks are not all
that's
illegal.
Right.
Sure. Well, one still has the right to sue, although that's very hard to do. Very hard to do, and we know with New York Times versus Sullivan, that if you're a public figure, it's almost impossible.
We really need to tighten up those libel laws.
Yes, we do, Rosemary.
Oh, the president would like to do that, Rosemary.
I know. He's standing up for all
even
of
though
us.
Your tongue is way in your cheek.
So I'm interested in, I want to have a brief discussion on karma.
yes, it's a...
So. Kevin Spacey goes to Nantucket yesterday. Had an appearance for sexual abuse of a young man in a bar in Nantucket, and he entered his plea, and then he flew.
Which is not guilty.
Which is not guilty.
It sounds like a limerick is coming.
And then he flew to Virginia and got in his car and then got pulled over for speeding.
Yeah.
That's a bad day.
That's a bad day, right? That's not a good. That's not a good day.
But another way, don't speed.
Well, right. Especially after you've been. My fear is always that you get pulled over, and then you get pulled over after you've just been pulled over. Mm. Do you ever have that?
That has happened. That's verifiable.
Yeah, I had that happen. We had a headlight out, right? And the cop pulls us over. And says, blah, 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 you know, you have to get it. And then, like, 5 minutes later, the same cop pulls us over. I'm like,
oh, the same cop?
Yeah, you just pulled us over.
And what did he say?
Oh, okay, sorry.
Well, sometimes when you're delayed by getting stopped for speeding, you got to make up the time you lost to get where you need to go.
There is that.
Just while we've been, a couple things while we've been talking. That have come out. Number one is that Mike Pence has clarified that the president's claim that all the former presidents have endorsed his idea of a wall was actually not true. It was just the president's impression.
Oh, please.
Oh,
this comes out
break.
This comes out after the
after each one of them came out.
This is released.
Even George Herbert Walker Bush got up and denied
right,
it.
Yeah. Right.
Alternative fact.
This happened as the former presidents said that they did not actually endorse ever having a wall. So they brought the vice president out 46 minutes ago to say, no, that wasn't he didn't. What he said isn't what he meant. What he meant was that it was his impression.
It's what he said is never what he means.
Well, you know, somebody with credibility needs to step forward, like, you know, Kelly, you know, the former chief of staff, or Mattis, or somebody with credibility needs to tell the American public what chaos is going on behind the scenes. And that the public deserves to know that.
But if they do that, then he just turns around and say that he's dumb as a box of rocks, or he's stupid, or he's whatever.
I don't know. Somebody with that kind of credibility.
Mulvaney's explanation Sunday, I like that even better about the presidents, was that, well, you know, these presidents are defining the word differently. You know, support of a wall is not exactly I support a wall. So that's good.
Right. There was one story that I read over the weekend that said supporting the wall was something Trump could remember when he was going onto the stage during his campaign.
Yes,
and that's why they pushed it. They really meant it to be a metaphor for border security.
Right.
But they told him, you know, build a wall because he could remember that and people could chant it back. They didn't mean it literally.
Right.
This is backfired on them.
Right, right. And that Mexico will pay for it. And now we have every federal employee paying for it.
Right. So now we're going to shut down for a mnemonic device.
Right.
Excellent.
Right.
Is Stephen Miller on furlough?
That's something that I think would be an amazing piece of legislation if when these government shutdowns happen that members of Congress, White House staff, the president, all their staff, that they don't get paid, you'd see a lot less shutdowns.
And they're all being so magnanimous because they're not taking their $10,000 raises that the cabinet was supposed to get.
Right.
Yeah,
it's like, aren't they nice?
All right. We are done. My thanks to everybody.
We're done.
Yeah.
So.
We went a few minutes extra, actually. Just a little bonus time.
It's 10:20.
Bonus time. We're into bonus time now.
Wow. Rosemary Mayo, you'll be here tomorrow. Libby, thank you. We'll see you next week. JP, Mike, congratulations. Enjoy your first full week of retirement.
Thank you, Joe.
And have fun. Alan, thank you. We'll be back right after this.